This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Books Uncovered, an exciting conversation about books and literary events, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bella.
Over the next half hour, we'll dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library. Kia ora, thanks for tuning in.
Kia ora, everyone.
We've got a special episode for you today. We're having a general chat of like what we're reading, but we've got a special guest in the studio, Danica. Kia ora, Danica.
Kia ora. Great to be here.
Danica's just moved here from Dorset in the UK, but you actually grew up in Dunedin, didn't you?
Yeah, for the first couple of years. I moved away when I was five, so I am from here but also a stranger, which is a really odd experience and kind of magical, a liminal experience.
Yeah, because you must have so many early memories from when you were a kid.
Yeah, I think it's more sensations, actually.
Yeah.
I have a really, really bad memory. And it's really interesting to have an abstract sense of home that I can't quite hang it on, but it's like it's a real somatic experience of being at deep ease while also not knowing really anybody or anything.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's like a real adventure.
Cool. Oh, well, welcome. I think Dunedin's a richer place for having you. So Danica's also been one of our, like, I don't know, most
committed
listeners.
It's pretty surreal being here because obviously I've been admiring the podcast from literally the other side of the world. And so now I'm here where the magic happens. And I feel like it's like an Alice Through the Looking Glass moment.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I've arrived. Fame at last.
Broken the fourth wall. Amazing. So we're just going to ask you a couple of questions about books. So what drew you into reading? Was it a person or is it a particular book?
Mm. So I think my mom gets all the credit for this. She was one of those parents who is one of those parents who always made sure there were beautiful books in our home. And one of them, I think of something like, maybe you had this in your home too, The Moldy, incredible picture book. Where it's, you know, like all these like little flower people and, you know, a mole comes in and disrupts their lives and then they befriend it. You know, it's like high drama. But she always made sure that there were these incredible illustrated books so that while she was reading, I could really understand what she was, you know, understand the language through the beauty of the pictures. And then I learned to read quite young and was a real precocious dick about it. And I was one of those kids who would read, like I couldn't stop reading, you know, like the cereal box on the table. I remember like Roald Dahl being a really big...
Roald Dahl.
Like sitting down and just reading Matilda in one day, you know, like I was that guy. I was ravenous for reading.
Awesome.
But yeah, I think the credit goes to my mom.
Oh, cool. And as you got into teenage years, were you like, was there anything that stood out there?
I was one of those kids who also read all the books they were told not to read. So I remember pretending to have the flu for an entire week so I could read The Mists of Avalon at the age of like 12.
Oh, I don't know this one.
I haven't read that one yet.
Oh,
my mum was just, I just got a copy for her and she's like, you have to read it.
You're going to love it because it's like, it is pretty romance.
Mm.
But also, like, you know, the clues in the name, it's very mystical. But it's all told from the perspective of Morgana le Fay, the sister of Arthur, King Arthur.
Oh.
And it really leans into, I guess it's like a second wave feminist book in many ways, where it's like centering the female characters. And it's beautiful. You know, it's, I think I've read it two or three times. It's a big tome of a book, but it's a real page turner.
Awesome.
And yeah, I remember reading it, and I didn't understand so much of what I was reading. Like, that's the point of the story, right? Is that I pretended to have the flu for an entire week. I read this 1,000-page book, and half of it was completely lost on me because it's adult themes.
Yeah.
And at 12, you just don't know. But I was still, like, compelled. So then I reread it a few years ago, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's totally inappropriate. I was that guy.
That's quite neat when your kids just persevere, even if it's, like, a difficult text, I think. that's how you learn, right?
Yeah.
I see my niece doing that, like tackling books that I'm like, what? Like what she was reading Catherine Chidgey, like the X-Men's Carnival when she was 12.
Wow.
like, okay. Well, I'm like, are you skim reading that? I think you're skim reading it.
Yeah.
But getting parts of it and persevering, I think, is, yeah.
And also getting a taste for like, I think also for me, I really sucked at being a kid. Like I was not good at being a child. And I mean, arguably, I'm really bad at being an adult, but but I really didn't enjoy being a child. And like people talk about like the wonder of it and stuff. I just really don't like people telling me what to do. And that's the entirety of being a child is being told what to do.
That's true.
And I was really hungry to grow up. And that's problematic in lots of ways, you know, and I think being a, you know, single child of an only parent, that often happens.
Mm.
But I think through reading, I was able, like so many people, able to escape to different worlds, but also to different elements of themselves without judgment. You know, like my partner, Robin, she reads a lot of science fiction and did as a young, like as an adolescent. She was really unhappy at school. She had, you know, real dysphoria around identity. But if she, you know, got into a book on a spaceship, like she could be anyone.
Yeah.
She could be anything.
Mm.
And that's like, I think what so many readers, like, you know, they were bullied at school or they were like escaping or, you know.
Yeah. It's what I always loved about like fantasy and sci-fi as well, was like explore these entirely different worlds where, yeah, like gender and sexuality and the whole makeup of like the society is completely different. So it's just like, yeah, it gives you the extra space to play with like what's possible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, reading is the best. And should be encouraged more, I think. And
I read somewhere, and I'm like, I'm the person who walks around being like, I heard this thing, and then I can never remember it. But I read somewhere recently that reading increases empathy in adults. And actually, I think the best parts of me, the things that I cherish the most in myself, are the parts that I found through books. Mm. And often it's connections with people and characters, but, you know, doorways to empathy and compassion.
Yeah, being able to inhabit that character's thoughts and feelings, for instance, and, yeah, experiencing that life.
Yeah.
It's a pretty wonderful gift. And also just how incredible our minds are that we can conjure up the images in our head. Like there's certain books I've read where I can still see the place that they created.
Yeah. That's always the most magical part for me.
Like, yeah.
It's really living inside there.
And place. That you can revisit it.
Yeah.
You know, like it lives
at any
with
time.
You forever. Yeah. It's magic.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I was wondering, how do you pick, like, what you're reading? Is it?
Well, yeah. I have the obvious answer, which is through Books Uncovered.
Why, thank you.
Yeah.
This is a paid promotion.
So I've just finished on All Fours, and I'm just finishing Call Me Ishmael. So I joined the Athenaeum when I got here. And I have a reading list that is based pretty much solely on your discussions.
Awesome.
Amazing.
So fangirl
Very
moment.
Flattering. Thank you.
And yeah, generally it's recommendations, but also, I am someone who buys books that are aspirational. So, like, I buy the books for the person I wish I was. And then I sometimes have to admit that I'm not going to read that book because actually I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
But then I leave it on the shelf as, like, a love for the person, the version of myself who might have read that book.
Who might still read it.
Who might still read it.
One day.
It's an act of hope, right?
Yeah.
It's an investment.
I think certainly that's what bookshelves are for, right? It's for a rainy day or
it's the
lockdown.
That's certainly what mine's for. I was like looking at my bookshelves, like I haven't read any of these. It's bad. I've took out this app, it's like a little spinning wheel. So next time I don't have a book to read, I spin the wheel and it picks one off my shelf.
Wow.
So I have to read it.
Do you? Oh wow. Is that app, it's for decision making or is it for?
Yeah, it's just like some free spinning wheel.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
I say that I have that app. I haven't used it yet because I continually get books out from the library, which isn't a problem, but it's like every time I come home with a new pile of library books, my partner Rose is like, Bella.
Yeah, and you have quite a few out, probably.
I do. I have read them.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I find I end up just reading a lot of new fiction at the moment.
Comes with the territory.
Right? It comes with the territory, but I really want to go back, you know, and read some of those that have been on the bucket list for a long time. Get there at some point. So, yeah, Danica, you're reading Call Me Ishmael.
Yeah.
How has that been?
I have absolutely loved it. So I'm just on the last, like, little bit, last, you know, 50 pages, I think. And it's when you introduced it on this podcast a few months ago, you were talking about new purchases. And it spoke to me immediately. I think I actually messaged you right after I listened to the pod being like, I cannot wait to read this book. And it's really, it's quite sentimental. But my dear friend who died quite a long time ago, she was my English teacher. Her name is Bethel. We had this ongoing thing where she was teaching Moby Dick. And I refused to read Moby Dick. And I remember saying to her, like, why? Why would I read this book that is only written by a man, only about men, and it's about killing animals? Like, there's literally nothing here for me. And it became this, like, joke that we had. And, you know, I'd drive her crazy because I'd write, you know, an essay about it and get an A. And she was like, how can you get an A when you haven't read the book? And I was like, I listened to you talk, you know, but I'm not going to read it. But not reading Moby Dick was a way for me to stay close to her even after she died, you know. So I'll never read Moby Dick, because while I never read Moby Dick, I continue the conversation with my dear friend. But then you introduced me to Call Me Ishmael, which is, of course, the version of Moby Dick that I was always wanting to read and that Bethel was always wanting to teach. It just didn't exist. Amazing. And so for me, it's like I get the pleasure of reading Moby Dick while maintaining not reading Moby Dick and it being like the book she would have wanted to talk to me about. And I think that's one of the things that I find the most magical about books, is because they're, of course, a doorway to other worlds. But they are also ways that we stay close to people. You know, so a friend in the UK recently sent me a photo of my favorite book, The Master and Margarita, and he was missing me, and he was like, I'm reading this so I can be close to you.
Oh, that's so lovely.
You know, and it's like, it really reminded me of, yeah, Moby Dick and my relationship with Bethel, and I was like, yeah, actually, I don't read Moby Dick so I can be close to Bethel.
What's the premise of Call Me Ishmael then? Can you give us a rundown?
It's a real...
Without any spoilers.
Yeah, so it's it's from the perspective of a young woman who... So it carries the trajectory of Moby Dick, which is whaling, hunting the white whale, but it's queered. So she dresses up as a man to get on board, and it brings a lot of questions around identity and who's allowed to do what. And the captain of the ship, Seneca, is black. And Moby Dick, the white whale, is, you know, there's an obsessive thing here. And the white whale is whiteness. You know, he's gone through some tragedy and has become fixated on vanquishing the whiteness of the whale. And so it's a really powerful story. There's a Maori harpoonist in it called Kauri. And he's an outcast from his village. And, you know, there are Japanese men on board. And so it's a real international story, as well as a Taoist monk. And the I Ching is a big part of it. And it's really powerful. It's difficult. You know, whaling is difficult. But in that, you know, and there's also some sexual violence, but not a lot. And I think what's really fantastic about Gao's writing is that she touches on these really big things. And I thought it was going to be a real heavy book. And it's like such a page turner. It's a joy to read. She doesn't sit in trauma. She just moves through it. Like, shit happens. Oh, I'm sorry. Am I allowed to swear on here? terrible things happen. And we find a way through them.
Yeah.
Or we are consumed by them. That also happens. Seneca is consumed by his trauma. But it's like, yeah, it's not trauma porn. You know, it's the reality, and it's really interesting. I feel like I'm learning a lot, but with a lot of levity and hope and curiosity.
Amazing.
Yeah, strong recommend.
And remind us the author's name?
Her last name is Gao, and I actually have her open.
It starts with X.
Yeah, it's Zhao Lu Gao.
Okay.
And yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. And awesome. I'm enjoying it.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm going to get that out. Add to my pile of books from that same library.
It was, I had actually when I was buying books for the library, I had my pile, and then as I was waiting to buy them, I saw that book and read the back and had to add it to the pile, even though it was putting me over the limit. So I'm really glad you have enjoyed reading that
one. Well, I'm really glad that you did, because like I said, it's a real joy to read, but also on a personal level.
Yeah.
It's like a beautiful coming, like it's like feels like a full circle of this personal story that I have around Moby Dick.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, so thanks for giving me the opportunity to live in that.
Pleasure. I think it's, been really wonderful to see these great works of literature being rewritten.
Like
James,
that's
Percival,
what I was going to say.
Everett. Just learned that actually this past year that's been the most popular book to be issued out at the Athenaeum.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm really looking forward
to reading that one
as well. It's so wonderful. I was quite surprised it didn't win the Booker, but his other stuff is incredible too. I actually want to buy.
Yeah, did you read The Trees?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I loved that one so much. That was,
pretty powerful.
Another one similar of dealing with these incredibly heavy themes, like lynching, but with a real levity. That, I felt like the same. I learned so much reading that novel and just,
And kind of disarming as well, because he uses a lot of humour.
Mm.
So it's kind of a funny story, but... Yeah, I think that's a real talent to be able to use humour in that way.
Oh, definitely.
And
it makes it like such an invitation. I think that's the power of humour as well. It's like an invitation. It's disarming, and you can find yourself stepping into really difficult things and being able to hold them in ways you didn't expect if humour is involved.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And you've already kind of answered this question, but your favourite book... of all time.
Oh yeah, I was shouting at you guys the other day when you were talking about magical realism.
Of course.
And I was like, oh my god, The Master and Margaret, it is the magical realism book of all time. But yeah, The Master and Margarita by Mikhail Bulgakov is my absolute favorite book, and I've read it many times. I've read many translations. I have a favorite translation, of course. I can't remember. It's two women who translated it. It's published by Picador.
Because originally published in Russian.
Yeah. Oh, actually, it was published in English first.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was banned. And
was that published?
It wasn't published, I think, till the late 60s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he wrote it. He wrote it many, 20 years before, 30 years before. But it was banned. And so it was smuggled out.
Do you know the book?
The Soviet Union.
Bella?
I've heard of it. I haven't read it. It's been on my to-read list
for
a very long time.
Yeah, I really... I'll get the names of the translator. I'll get the version and send it to you. Because there's a literal translation, which is horrific.
Mm.
And then there's a couple of other translations that just don't have it. And I think the two women who translated it for Picador, one is a native Russian speaker and one is a native English speaker, and together they managed to capture some real magic. And and that book is the reason I studied Russian.
Amazing.
I mean, I sucked at it, and I still can't speak it, but that book is the reason I studied
Russian. Can you give us a little rundown on what happens in the book?
Yeah, so it's the premise is it's Moscow, 1930s, and the devil comes to town. And... when I read it the first time, I hadn't studied any Soviet or Russian history, so I didn't know what it was about. I just read it as a novel, and it was incredible, mind-blowing. And it oscillates between 1930s Moscow and Jerusalem and the crucifixion of Christ. Mm. And Bulgakov was a very religious man, and in the Soviet Union it was illegal to be religious, right? God didn't exist. And so... you can understand in that context why it wasn't published, because he's talking about Jesus as a historical figure, and he's got the devil validating that. And but it's total carnage in Moscow, and people are disappearing, and all kinds of crazy things are happening. And then when you study Soviet history, it becomes really clear that it's about the terror, which is the horrific events that gripped the Soviet Union under Stalin, where people were disappeared in the middle of the night, and people were reported by their neighbors because there was a housing shortage and they wanted the flats.
Oh, God.
It was horrific. And the only way that you can actually comprehend how it felt to be in that horror and in that chaos was actually through magical realism, because it was so surreal.
Mm.
And so reading it then as a student of Russian history and Soviet history, it opened an entire new understanding, and it's a really incredible piece of work.
Yeah, amazing. I read it a long time ago. I'm not sure which translation, but just that opening scene when we're introduced to the devil, and he has a sidekick that's a cat.
Yes.
But is he a man? Is he a cat?
He's a kind of walking, talking cat who jumps on and off trams and things and has a revolver.
Oh, you've absolutely sold that to me. I'm going to get that to read
immediately. I strong recommend.
I love magical
cats. I can't wait. Then we can go for like coffee and we can talk
about
it.
That, yeah,
I love geek out.
Yeah, of course, it's the magical realism book. It's definitely up there, isn't it? Have we got any more questions for... What are you reading at the moment, Bella? We're both reading the same book.
I haven't started it. I bought it from work because... what the book is the Silver Book by Olivia Lang, which I immediately brought because if you've listened to the
Olivia.
Show, I love Olivia Lang.
It's her first fiction.
Her second one, actually.
Second?
I haven't read her first one, which is called Crudo, came out a few years ago.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I think I was going, when it came out, I was going through a not reading fiction phase. But I've heard it's very good. But I haven't started the Silver Book yet. I'm reading The Land in Winter by Andrew Miller.
Oh, yes.
Which I got from the Athenaeum, which I will say, if you want to get any books that are on the Booker lists, go there, join up, because they're all just on the shelf ready to be taken out.
There. Yeah. Yeah. There's no queues or pay $5 to read it in 2 weeks.
Yeah. But so far I'm loving it. It's sort of set in Britain in the 1960s, sort of dealing with like post-World War II issues. It's like follows two couples that are living in a small country town just outside of Bristol, and it's just like at the moment it seems like a lot dealing with loneliness, and especially like sort of a lot of gender stuff. There's like the wives that are both pregnant and on their own and sort of just their internal lives, and then they meet each other and form this friendship. And I'm loving it so far. I'm really enjoying being inside the heads of all the characters.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Because it was on the shortlist, wasn't it?
Yeah, it got shortlisted.
I haven't heard very good things about the winner, which was Flesh by David Chegley.
Yeah, I'm quite excited to read it just because of like how many people differing reviews I've heard. It's like...
Yeah, that it's quite a sort of masculine text.
Yeah, it's a lot of talk of like the return to masculine contemporary fiction. I'm like, must we?
Hasn't that been done already?
Hasn't that been like literally the entire history of literature?
But that said, I heard a really positive review of it from Roundtable Books in London, which is a beautiful bookshop that centres majority experience texts, so queer and people of colour, those voices, and
they gave it a good review.
Yeah, and she said no one writes men like David is what she said, and I was like, okay, interesting.
Yeah, that's why I'm so intrigued to read it, because I have heard a lot of really good reviews of like this exploration of masculinity, which isn't, I don't think it's not a bad thing.
Understanding the enemy. No, sorry, I didn't mean that, guys. Not all men.
Yeah, I've only had the members from the library taking it out, and then some not getting through it, or other people being like, yeah, not for me. I mean, it's always a bit arbitrary. We've talked about this before, haven't we, with winning books. Of just depends who's judging them.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying the Silver Book so far?
I am, but I feel like I need to do some background research, because it's about two famous filmmakers in the 1970s. But yeah, it's a really interesting style of writing. It's really minimalist. But yeah, there's an intrigue. There's kind of a thriller aspect of it. We'll talk about it another time.
I'll read it and then we could do a dual review.
We could do a dual review. Maybe next week, because there's a closed down period over Christmas, of course, and we'll be recording a show for that next week, and then maybe another one, I think. Danica, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's a highlight.
Yeah.
It's a highlight of my life, guys. I'm going to send it to all my friends. I'm so excited.
Awesome.
My mom's going to be so proud.
Welcome to Dunedin. And we look forward to seeing what you do here as well.
Thank you.
Cool. Yeah. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Ka kite. Books Uncovered. Exciting conversations about books and literary events. Brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
Join us, Holly and Bella, every second Saturday at 12 p.m. as we dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library.
That's Books Uncovered.
Saturdays at 12 on ORFM and online at oar.org.nz.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.